Welcome to the Immigrant Stories program. I'm your host, Walter Gallagher, and my interview today is with John Goodwin. John has spent over 30 years as a peace officer, working up and down the valley. He's been a patrol officer, a jailer, a deputy sheriff, and chief of police in Aspen. And for the last 12 years of his career, he was professor of criminal justice at Colorado Mountain College's Police Academy. John's been a strong advocate of community-focused policing throughout his career, and I wanted to get his opinion about the last 2 weeks in our country. We started by talking about his family and the life events that shaped him.
My mom came from Cleveland, Ohio. She was the daughter of Joe Wasoski and Caroline Wasoski. He was a butcher, an entrepreneur, I guess you would call him. Back in those days, they didn't have that term for it, you know, but he owned a couple apartment houses. He was a business guy. And my mom, Catherine, had a younger sister, and she had an older brother, Albert. One day, this is back in Cleveland, a couple of guys came into the butcher shop to rob it. And Joe, my grandfather Joe, and my uncle Albert were in there. You know, Joe gave him all the money that he had, and then when they were leaving, he ran. There was a door that separated his business from a business right next to it, and the guy next to it had a pistol. My grandfather ran in there, grabbed the pistol, and ran out in the street. He didn't know how to operate the damn thing. I'm sure I had the safety on it. He didn't know what to do. And they shot him. They shot my grandfather.
Oh.
And then Albert ran out after that, picked up the pistol, and they shot him too. And Albert died. Okay.
Oh, John, and, that's...
Oh, and, yeah. And it was... and it... It happened on Good Friday, and so every Easter, when it came around to Easter time, my mom, she just got into a funk. She just, because she adored her older brother. Okay, and so I have some history, you know, of someone in my family being murdered and the effects of that on people. My grandmother, I didn't know her before that. I wasn't even born then. But, you know, according to my mom, it just, she just, the light went out in her. And so, you know, on some level, that was a thin little layer of my, and I didn't know it, you know, for a long time. A thin little layer of my attitude towards helping people who have been on the short end of the stick. And, you know, people who've been victims.
Well, that's one of the bricks in the mortar that of your foundation, you know, that led you to be a career police officer, right?
Yeah, no, and I didn't know that. Okay, and then my dad, he came from Uniontown, Pennsylvania. My mom and my dad met in Cleveland, and my dad came from a coal mining family. You know, what I got from him was basically rooting for the underdog, caring for the poor man. We would watch the fights, the boxing matches on Wednesday nights and Friday nights. It was Friday night fights were on TV when I was growing up as a kid. And my dad always rooted for the underdog. He always rooted for the underdog. And so what I got from him, and he became a strong union guy when he went to Cleveland. He was a motorman on a trolley, strong union guy. So what I got from him essentially was a disdain for people with money, a disdain for rich people. So where did I go to work as a cop? Aspen, Colorado, which gave me a chance to really have a hard look at you know those ideas about people with money and people with privilege and people, you know, powerful folks, you know, and how to plug myself into that relationship. And how to not let that disdain that was really woven into me, you know, from birth, run me.
Thread that needle for me. So this is your start, and you end up in Aspen. But what?
In between there, okay.
There's so quite an in between. Yeah,
I was conceived in Cleveland, Ohio, and but I was born in Glendale, California. And during that time, my parents packed it up and headed out west. My dad had a cousin who had a garage. He was a mechanic in Eagle Rock, California, which is right adjacent to Glendale. And my dad started, we got there and he ran a gas station and my mom was at home. And, you know, over time, I got two sisters out of it too. There were three of us.
If you're just joining us, you're listening to the Immigrant Stories program. I'm your host, Walter Gallagher, and my interview today is with John Goodwin. John has spent over 30 years in community policing up and down the valley. The last 12 years of his career, he was a professor of criminal justice at Colorado Mountain College's Police Academy. Right?
Yeah. As things unfolded, my dad was a pretty serious alcoholic on top of it. And we had domestic violence in the house. You know, my dad beat my mom. Two things. They think that's just how it is, okay? But at the same time, I thought everybody else led a Leave It to Beaver life, okay? And I was the only one growing up in that kind of condition. And it took a long time for me to figure out. And when I did figure out, and I'll jump ahead here, okay, it goes all the way to Aspen. And I was a cop and living, you know, in the valley here. The first domestic violence call I went with another police officer, knocked on the door, and they were still arguing, the two men and the woman were arguing. Okay. And I walked in the door, and I didn't become a cop till I was 30. A 30-year-old man, I walked in that door into that living room, and as I walked in, my emotional age, I went back to being an 8-year-old boy again. And I was an 8-year-old boy in my living room.
In your house.
In my house, and I froze. I wanted to be so invisible. I was scared to death. I knew how to do this. I mean, I had developed the skill of getting invisible. Okay, in that environment, you just blend right into the wall. Okay, you shut up. You don't say a thing. You don't want to be seen. Okay, and so essentially, I left the cop alone to deal with this, and I went back down. I sat in my car. And I cried for about a half an hour.
Wow.
I sat in my car and cried and cried and cried. And I came to the realization, the good one, if you're going to do this, you better figure out how you can deal with this. Okay?
Yeah.
You've got to figure out how to do this. Okay? And that was the impetus for me joining the Adult Children of Alcoholic Parents.
There you go.
Okay? It was part of my decision that I needed help. And I go to this first meeting, and here's the vice president of the bank, here's a teacher from these are people I know, and we're looking at each other, and it hit me like a freight train. This is the reality of life, you know.
People and domestic grow up in violence. Homes.
Oh yeah, and how resilient human beings can be, full of pain and hurt. But you know, we hunker down, we get things done, we don't give up. Some of us do, I know that, and we need to help folks like that. And on that night, you know, I sat in there at that room, and we were sharing our stories, and it was like, oh wow, we've all got the same script. It's the same play. It's
wow.
The same.
Yeah.
It's the same. It's the same play. And so that's the kind of household I grew up in. But we were solid Catholics. My mom never even considered believing my dad. Never did. She hung in there. I went to Catholic grade school. I went to a Catholic high school. And then I went to a Catholic Jesuit university. I went to Loyola University in Los Angeles. That's where I learned my place in the universe, that I'm not alone here, that I have a connection with every other human being, that we have obligations to each other.
How did domestic violence shape you? I mean, did that go on for a long time? I mean, was that something that was in the house for your whole growing up?
Oh, yeah.
Well, as a young man, it must have been so conflictual for you, you know, to love your dad and you loved your mom.
You want to look at your dad and you want to love him. And I loved my dad, but my love for my dad I would submit is it's different than it is for a lot of other guys, you know. But it took me a long time to realize he did not get up in the morning, Walter, make a pot of coffee, get a yellow legal tablet and a pencil or a pen, and make a list of the ways he was going to mess with me that day. He didn't make a list of how he was going to fail me. He didn't make a list of how he's going to fail everybody around him. He learned to be a father from his father.
Okay? Yeah, it's passed down.
He learned to be a guy from his father. When I began to realize that, when I started to get the little nuggets, so I had to say to myself, well, are you going to do it? What are you going to do? And the truth is that, you know, I carry stuff from him. You know, I've got anger issues, and that I really, really have to work on. I'm 73 years old, and I'm still working on stuff. Okay, it never stops.
Yeah,
but
working on your masterpiece.
Oh yeah.
Lifelong.
Yeah. I know. Well, and using that as a metaphor, you know, you just got to make sure that you've got the materials there. You got the brushes, and you got the paints. Uh-huh. And you got the canvas all ready to go and everything, you know.
Well, it helps to get up in the morning and have a list of things that you're going to do and not do.
Yeah, that connects a lot with the whole policing thing about you don't wait till you're in a situation to decide what to do. Departments and officers who really want to be good at what they're doing, we practice ahead of time. We put ourselves in situations ahead of time over and over and over and over again. And then when we're done with that one, then we sit down together and we critique it. Big boys and big girls who are police officers welcome, don't always enjoy, but ask for criticism. Okay, how do you think I did on that one? And they have a guy or a gal who's with you say, well, John, you know, when you did this, you were going in the wrong direction on that. And for me to say, well, thank you, instead of saying, well, what do you mean by that? You know, and then arguing about it.
If you're just joining us, you're listening to the Immigrant Stories program. I'm your host, Walter Gallagher, and my interview today is with John Goodwin. John has spent over 30 years in community policing up and down the valley. The last 12 years of his career, he was a professor of criminal justice at Colorado Mountain College's Police Academy. He's explaining his approach to training around community policing. You've spent your life trying to spread the gospel of community policing. The difference between a peace officer and a law enforcement officer.
Oh, yeah. When I was running the police academy, and then subsequently after I went and did police work again and then came back and taught down there, we get out that statute book and open that thing up. And I wanted them to know right from the beginning that in the statutes, Colorado Revised Statutes, we're referred to as peace officers. And part of what I wanted to help people get was that words matter. When the Colorado legislature decided to call us peace officers, they chose that word instead of law enforcement officers.
Yeah.
Instead of police officers. One of our goals has to be that when we show up, we don't make stuff worse.
This has been a really hard time for our country. But black people and brown people would say it's been a hard time for a long time. Explain how community policing is a better approach than some of the things we've seen it displayed.
There's something that we talked about at the academy, and that is peace officers are in the business of asking, telling, and making people do things, okay? And in the vast majority of cases, that's the order that you do them. I ask you, Walter, would you just stand over on the other side of the room there while I talk to your friend Paul here? And you say, no, I'm not going to. Actually, this is going to be on the radio, so I'm not going to say what you would say to me. Okay. Because there's a whole vocabulary around that. Okay. So you say, no. And I say, Walter, come on. Just stand over there. Okay. Would you please? And you say, no. And I look you in the eye now. I open up the lid on my toolbox, my emotional and psychological toolbox.
Using your words.
And I pull out the mask that I put on for the next thing, which is tell. And I look at you and I say, Walter, no more asking. Go over there and stand against the wall. Do it now. And you say, no, I'm not going to do it. And that's when I turn to my fellow officer, Todd, who's standing right next to me, and I say, Todd, take care of this, will you? And Todd grabs you by the arm, and he drags you over against the wall. So now I can talk to Paul over here without you interrupting us. Now, the truth is, the majority of time when I ask you, you'll go over there. And you know why? Because you know me and I know you.
Yes.
Okay? The reason you know me and I know you is because in my little part of the town where I've been assigned, I've been out of my car and walking around, and I know all the shop owners, and I know all the bar owners, and when I'm working night shift, I stop in the bar, and I get a cup of coffee, and I sit down, and I BS with people.
You knew my name before the stop.
I knew you.
You knew, yeah.
I knew you. And because I'd established a relationship, you were in a position to trust me that when I asked you to do something, that I wasn't hosing you.
Right. That you weren't disrespecting me.
No,
that you'd
no,
already
no.
established this respect before.
Yeah. And so that requires me, and this is where it can get difficult, okay? Because, you know, I'll be real honest with you. Talk can get real cheap here in the Valley about some of these kinds of things, because we didn't deal with racial issues here. Certainly not black-white ones. You know, Latino ones, absolutely. But there's a different dynamic in there. The absolute truth is Latinos didn't come here as slaves 400 years ago. Okay?
Yeah.
They weren't enslaved. There's that. And this is where the whole policing thing, it's not a standalone deal.
Yeah, asking the police to do a lot.
We're asking the police to do everything that we won't do. There's a guy, and he's died a few years ago. His name was John Stewart, a songwriter and a performer. And John wrote a tune called Cops. And the first time I heard it, I just got goosebumps. I thought, geez, I know he wasn't a cop, but how does he know this? There's a line in there that says, we love you when we need you, and we hate you when we don't, because you're the ones who will, and we're the ones who won't. Okay? My job was to take care of the problems and to resolve the stuff. The expectation was that I would fix stuff that everybody else didn't want to fix. They didn't want to deal with it. And it's like, you know, the expectation was that I was going to raise your kids for you. You know,
yeah.
I'm serious. I don't know how many times I got called over a house somewhere, you know, where a kid was acting up and they expected me to straighten it out. And, you know, I would do the best I can just to keep get it peaceful there at the moment. But a neighbor calling you up because a guy mowed his lawn and the wind picked up the clippings and it came over into the other guy's yard and he wanted the police to deal with that. That's how petty things can get. This is where over time you can begin to get cynical about the human race.
Yeah.
And the human's capacity to actually, you know, act like a human being. So the antidote to that is that you acquire on a regular basis as a police officer enough quality, good, fulfilling experiences with human beings, okay, to balance out against, you know, what I would consider to be the idiots out there. You know, when stuff goes on, I'll be with somebody and they'll say, geez, can you believe that happened? You know, and I go, yeah, that's why I had a job all those years. I didn't have a job because every day I was in a gunfight protecting people, from bad guys robbing them. I had a job, you know, to just kind of keep peace in the community. It wasn't law enforcement. It was peacekeeping.
If you're just tuning in, you're listening to the Immigrant Stories program, and my interview today is with John Goodwin. John has spent over 30 years in community policing, and he's just been discussing the difference between law enforcement and peacekeeping. How many years?
As a police officer and then in the classroom, I mean, it was a good 40 years between running the academy and teaching in the academy and then working in Aspen and Snowmass Village. And I worked down in Garfield County for a while. I wouldn't trade any experience I had. I wouldn't trade them for anything. Okay. And I had some pretty heinous experiences, but I wouldn't trade those because it's part of the human condition. It was real stuff. People do things to other people that are just overwhelmingly bad. But that's the world. And all I have to do is think about, well, what's it like in Syria right now? What do those people have to deal with every day? Right. Okay. Right. And let's bring it closer to home. You know, I have two sons. I never, ever sent them out the door worried that they were going to get shot that day, either by a gangster or by a cop.
Yeah.
No. That was never ever there.
We live in a segregated society, and in some ways, you know, police are supposed to maintain that. You know.
Oh, when I watched Rodney King, the night I watched, I was police chief up in Aspen then. Okay, when that happened. And my wife and I watched the evening news, and we saw it on TV. And I turned to my wife and I said, it's going to be a rough day at work tomorrow. Okay. I mean, there's going to be reporters camped out, you know, from the Aspen Daily News and the Aspen Times, you know, camped out on the, you know, at the door coming into the PD tomorrow, wanting to know what I think about this. Okay. And so I said to myself, well, you better start thinking about this then. It was then the next day when I was getting asked about it that I said, you know, the cops who did that, they didn't just make that up on their own. If you look at the area, Simi Valley, I don't know how it is now, but then for sure, it was like 99.9% white, middle class, upper middle class. The message that those cops had gotten wasn't written down anywhere. It wasn't even said out loud, but it was a message that they got subtly through every pore of their body, every moment of their lives. What they got was, we don't want people like that in our neighborhood. And then after they whipped on him with the sticks and everything, and this is what cracked me up, people out there said, oh no, we didn't mean to do it that way. And then the cops came back and said, what do you mean? You said you didn't want him here. We were taking care of business for you. And then the people said, not in so many words, no, but we didn't mean for you to beat him with a stick. We just didn't want him here. Okay, and what happens is that everybody just shrugs their shoulders and says, well, I guess we'll never be able to figure this one out. My point here is that, you know, right now in this political world that we're living in now, which I come right out and say it, which has given permission for a lot of people to do a lot of things that a few years back they didn't get permission for, the reaction now right away is to pass legislation about cops. And what I say is, that's all fine and dandy, but you better start looking at what's underneath all of that.
Yes.
This didn't start with Derek Chavez going to the police academy and becoming a police officer. Absolutely not.
Okay? You're talking about the Minneapolis Chauvin?
Chauvin, yeah, I'm sorry. Yeah, the guy who knelt on George Floyd's neck. It didn't start with him. No. He needs to be held accountable. Other three guys need to be held accountable. The department needs to be held accountable. But there's an endless amount of accountability that goes around.
There's nothing easy, particularly about police work.
Keeping the peace.
Everybody has an opinion. Everybody wants it a certain way.
Well, I real quick, one last thing. When I was a cop up in Aspen, there was a Pitt County deputy who worked up there, and we were both working the graveyard shift together. Okay, there, you know, at 4 o'clock in the morning, there's one Aspen cop and one Pitt deputy, and his name was Gary Essery, and Gary had been an attorney, decided to be the Pitt County deputy for a while, and we were talking about this kind of stuff. You know, and I was spouting off, you know, this and that in my earlier versions of things. And he said, you know, John, the truth is the best we can do is tie.
Looking back on your 40 years, what do you think the score is?
I think we're tying.
Yeah.
Sure, the cops got to get their stuff together, okay. But we're part of it. We're part of it. We're not all of it. Don't look to us to fix everything for you. Okay, you got a community. You know, get busy.
Thanks for all the years that you spent trying to make our communities a more peaceful place to be.
Well, and there were plenty of people that I was working with,
exactly,
who were doing the same thing, who don't, they did the work. They don't talk about it. They did the work. I would tell them, look, you're not self-employed out there. You know, cops are not self-employed. You're not running your own business. Okay. You know,
you're working for somebody, for everybody.
Yeah. And you're not working for the chief, and you're not working for your sergeant that night. You're actually working for that guy out there on the corner who you're about to arrest. Isn't that interesting? Okay. That's how it works.
That was John Goodwin, career peace officer and retired professor of criminal justice. To learn more about Immigrant Stories, go to our website, immigrantstories.net. Thanks for listening.